It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, you choose it, you make a request, and you become the Bumper Patrol. All right, maybe we can call them the Bumper Patrol now. 312-981-7200. John requested Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science, in honor of our current topic, the catchiest songs according to science. I noticed, Esmeralda, that you were grooving.
I was singing.
She Blinded
Me. Loudly.
I love that song. Now, are you aware of another accomplishment, another grand accomplishment of the one and only Thomas Dolby?
Oh, man. I used to know. I don't remember. He's not like Dolby sound, is he?
No.
Okay. Then I don't know.
No. He composed the music for Fever Pitch, the worst movie ever made.
Oh, man. Yeah. Is this before or after She Blinded Me
After She Blinded Me with Science.
Oh, man.
Fever Pitch was 1985, and we're not talking about the stupid movie with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore's. We're talking about the fantastic movie that no one can see because it's just not available. The best, worst movie ever made, Fever Pitch with Ryan O'Neal.
I hope he didn't turn down other projects and be like, no.
Well, you know,
I'm going to work on Fever Pitch.
You know, I got to tell you, it's not a bad score. It's actually a fun score. It's completely inappropriate for the movie, but it's kind of a fun score.
Right.
In terms of you know, him putting together a score, it's good.
I mean, it doesn't work though if the movie's terrible.
Well, it's the worst movie.
It makes
no
sense.
Yeah, but it is the worst movie ever. But yeah, I've seen it like 800 times because it's just so bad. I mean, you've been lucky enough to see it. I happen to have a bootleg burned DVD of it. And
I still don't understand. I just don't get it.
The movie?
Yeah, that storyline is just ridiculous.
He's Steve Taggart. He's the undercover reporter. He's going to bust open the gambling in Vegas.
But then he doesn't.
Well, because he becomes addicted.
Yeah, I shouldn't spoil it.
Yeah, don't
alert.
Spoil it for anybody. You know, because I'm sure that there's a queue for people lining up waiting to see Fever Pitch with Ryan O'Neal. Catherine Hicks and John Saxon and Chad Everett as the bad guy. It is seriously, though. I mean, you've seen it, Esmeralda. It's mind-bogglingly bad.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
Like, even in the beginning, there's something that happens, like, right in the beginning or the credits. It's just like, what is going on?
Oh, yeah. No. Seriously, it right out of the gate, it earns its stripes as perhaps the worst movie ever made. But enormously entertaining. I told you the story that I put it on one night. My ex-wife Heather was like, "Why are we watching this? I don't want to watch a bad movie." And I'm like, "I'm telling you, this is hypnotizingly, splendidly, hilariously awful."
It is.
And she's like, "I don't want to watch." And literally 5 minutes in, she's like, "I've never seen anything like this before in my life."
I did want to know how it ended.
Yeah. Oh, she loved it. She had watched it repeatedly with me. Like, we'd have people over, and she's like, "All right, look, we have to watch Fever Pitch." Once you've experienced it, man, I'm telling you, once you've experienced the greatest, worst movie ever made, Fever Pitch, if you have a VHS player out there, if you're listening to me, there are VHS copies that are floating around out there on eBay, on other auction sites, and used on Amazon. If you have a VHS player, it's worth it. I think that they should put out a Criterion Collection Blu-ray triple disc.
You can buy it on Amazon.
Like, stream it?
No. You buy the VHS tape.
Right.
From, like, Goodwill.
Yeah, exactly.
$10, though.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
$10.
Plus shipping.
But it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
It is.
And you'll get the cover.
With Ryan O'Neal holding the magical dice. As he's about to shoot craps.
Oh, my gosh.
It is the best. And I also, there's so many things about that movie that are just so amazing, including the character's name, including the fact that Ryan O'Neal plays undercover reporter Steve Taggart, which is like one of the greatest names in film history. I'm undercover award-winning reporter Steve Taggart. So stupid. Oh, man. Okay. Hey, I wanted to mention, first of all, I want to thank everybody for coming out last night to see Risky Business. It was a real important one for me, and we had a huge turnout. And so thank you very, very much. And everybody stayed while I talked. Nobody left. Well, you know why? Because they all wanted to see the new ending, or the old ending. They all wanted to say, I saved that. I talked in between. I did my little dissertation telling them that, yes, you have to stay to see Paul Brickman's original ending. You have to stay. Because the director, if you have not heard, the director was forced to change his ending, his original ending of Risky Business, to the ending that you now see in the movie. And it's a little more upbeat than the ending he wanted. He was never satisfied with it. And so we showed his original ending. A guy comes up to me afterwards and introduces himself and said, I want to show you something. This is a term paper that I wrote in college. And I want you to look at it. He said, this is a term paper I wrote in college, and this was 1985 when I wrote this. Hey, the same year that Fever Pitch came out. Anyway, and Risky Business came out in 83. So he said to me here, and he looked, and it was, he did it entire, like, term paper, like a thesis, kind of, on Risky Business and the corruption. I mean, it's exactly what I was saying the movie was. And this guy had written a paper in 1985 about Risky Business, about the themes of Risky Business, about the corruption of the innocent, about female sexuality and its implications on both female and men, and the power of business. And he wrote this thing, and I was like, wow, that's fantastic. And he said he was in college. He's a couple of years older than me. He was in college when he saw Risky Business, and he brought his term paper so that I could see it. And he got a B. So there were like-minded lunatics there last night. There were people there that, you know, I mean, they sat through all of my, you know, because I was talking about, I was breaking down scenes and symbolism within the scenes and what this line of dialogue meant and what this action was all about and how that, affected the entire theme of the movie. And people didn't get bored, or maybe they did. They just didn't leave. And they seemed genuinely interested. People were asking questions and stuff. And that was just, I was in my element last night because that movie, I could talk about that movie for 10 hours. I actually had notes for the first time that I've ever hosted a film club screening. I had to pull out crib notes. I felt like Ray Rayner. I should have had him pinned to my jumpsuit. There's a reference that anybody under 50 now is not getting. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for coming out. It was a really, really, it was a great night. And it was such an amazing movie to see on the big screen again. And I know that movie back and forth and backwards and forwards and all that stuff. But I want to thank everybody for coming out. It was a great turnout. And again, next month, June 7th, is our next film club screening, and it's Raiders of the Lost Ark, the 35th anniversary Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's going to be a blast. Fantastic. This is Jim Laskowski for Wildcard Wednesday. And it's Jim's birthday today. Happy birthday, Jim. He was at the screening of Risky Business last night. And God bless him, he requested George Michael. If only Keegan-Michael Key were here to explain to us and all the other gangsters how badass and gangster George Michael really is, because they never heard from Ridgely ever again. Oh, another really quick thing. I want to thank the listener who came out. She's been to my film clubs a couple of times. And last night she showed up. And, before the movie, I usually walk around Bogart's and go from table to table a little bit and talk to some people and say hi before the movie. And I went up to her table and she's like, I got something for you. And I'm like, oh, okay. She got me the calendar, the Keanu calendar that we were talking about the other night. And it's, I can't even explain to you how excited. I hugged her. I actually went, I gasped audibly when she handed it to me. It's the calendar that features Keanu the cat in all the different poses recreating scenes from movies. And it's a 2016 calendar. And I was so grateful. And then she tells me that her son is Key and Peele's manager. And I was like, why have you not told me this before? Considering that I'm the biggest Key and Peele fan on the planet. For God's sake. Anyway, thank you very much. It was a lovely, lovely night. Yeah. And I also just want to point out that I just got a message from Vic, who is in the other room working. But he sent me this message via like the Facebook messaging thing. And it just says, Nick, what's up with the middle door always being locked when Joel tries to gain access to his campus? Okay, it happens twice in the movie where he tries to get into school and the door is locked. And this is my interpretation of it. His access to education and his future have become blocked because of his sexual temptations. That's what I sent. That's what I think it's about. And it is. And then Vic sent back, So thank you, Vic. Vic texting me from the newsroom.
It's not because somebody just forgot to unlock that door.
No. It happens at two moments in the movie where he has to get to school. It's imperative that he get in there. And it's locked, and it happens after he's had sexual temptation or done something corruptible. It happens after there's a reason for every shot of that movie. I'm not exaggerating. There is an absolute reason that continues to carry the theme of what that film is about in every frame of that movie. It is a masterpiece.